for both inviting me and organizing this very good conference. I usually don't feel that I fit very much in conferences which are either just harmonic analysis or just number theory, but this one is a very nice mixture of both, and I really like it. So, I'm going to speak about a problem which a colleague of mine, who is not an analyst, does some kind of combinatorial group theory or geometric group theory, raised. And it's the following problem. Suppose you take the plane and you subdivide it with the integer lines. So each of these squares is one by one, and then you color it, you color the cells black or white, however you want. And the question is it possible to color it in such a way so that if you place a line segment of arbitrary length on this checkerboard and you measure how much is its black length and how much is its white length, they should differ by at most a constant. Okay, this is what I will call the discrepancy of the line segment. And it's a, I think that everybody would immediately guess that the answer is no, you cannot do that. And I will give you a simple proof of this using harmonic analysis. Before I start with the proof, let me just mention that if you just try simple things like the chessboard coloring, it certainly does not work, because if all this diagonal is black, then you can place a line segment across the diagonal, it gets all black, which is a huge discrepancy. Now this, it was a real surprise for me that this problem turns out not to have been studied before. I mean, it's such a simple problem, both in its statement and as you will see in its solution, that you expect that this must have been looked at. And at least in the literature of geometric discrepancy, which is where I think it clearly fits in, there's no such result as the one I will show. The closest to this problem which I found was a study by Rogers, who was a student of Alexander at Illinois, who did study checkerboard coloring, but then he measured the discrepancy not with respect to line segments, but with respect to rectangles. But it does not appear to me that our two results can say something about the other. So usually in problems of geometric discrepancy, one has a family of objects which are free to move around, like rectangles in the classical case. So the very classical case is where you have the unit square or unit cube in higher dimensions, and then you put a collection of points in here and you measure the discrepancy of rectangles which are axis aligned, or in other variations which are not axis aligned, or the discrepancy of disks. Now in that case, the discrepancy is to measure how many points are in the rectangle and compare it with how many you expect, which in this case is the area of the rectangle, because the whole thing has area 1. And this has been studied a lot. There are also other problems, not in a very geometric setting, where you have a ground set of points and you color its elements, let's say plus or minus 1, or using two colors, and then you have a collection of subsets, like ground set, and for each of those subsets you want to see what's the excess of one color over the other. But it doesn't seem that any of those has anything to say about this. At least I didn't manage to make any obvious connection. So let me state my theorem that for any such coloring, there exists a line segment I such that a discrepancy of I, which is the excess of black over white in absolute value, is at least a constant times the square root of the length. Okay, this is what I will prove. Well, let me give you the proof. So let's make a finite version of the problem so as to be able to work with it. I will consider a n by n checkerboard. Okay? And I will also take an arbitrary function which is plus 1 or minus 1 in each of the cells and a 0 outside. Let me call this function f. So f is 0 outside the large checkerboard and constant plus or minus 1 in each cell. I will show that there exists a line L, something like this. So my lines will go from the border to the border, don't stop in between. There exists a line such that the integral of f on the line is at least c root n, which clearly implies that, because take an n by n part of your infinite coloring, find this line, and then this will be your segment. Obviously, what happens outside this does not affect the discrepancy of this line. So it will be enough to prove this. And I will give a Fourier analytic proof. It's very simple. And goes like this. So let me call m a supremum of this quantity. And this is what I want to show is large. Okay? So let the origin be here. Now let me draw another line, let me call it f, through the origin, and define the projection of the function f onto this line s. Let me call it pi s of f. This will be a one-variable function defined on this, and its value here will be given by the integral of f along the perpendicular line. Okay, so this will be the integral of f, let me call this unit vector here u. So this function at x will be this integral. So this is how I project the function. I integrate along this line. And now it's very easy to see, using Fubini, that if you take the Fourier transform of this one variable function, and you evaluate it at x, so x is a real number, you will get the Fourier transform of f, this is a two-dimensional function, evaluated at xu. So restricting the Fourier transform on S is the same as taking the Fourier transform of the projection on S. This is just B. Okay. And let me now write down the first relation, which follows. First of all, if you integrate this squared, well, you will get the integral of this squared. And now let me bound my function by. So this assumption here, I forgot to say, implies that this function is bounded by n. The projection function is bounded by m. Right? This is the bound for the projection function. So if I increase this to become m, and then I observe that the support of this function is of the order of n, so if you project this this n by n squared onto any line, you'll get something between minus cn and n. You'll get this inequality, which is in the right direction. And then the next observation you make is that if you integrate over the plane the Fourier transform squared, you will get the same as, this is Parseval gating the plane this time, F squared, which is going to be, now let me make, so as not to confuse myself by looking at my paper, let me make the assumption that instead of having plus and minus 1 here, we make it slightly more general. So in cell ij, I'm going to have a complex number vij. Okay, this is how it phrases here, so I don't want to deviate too much. So my function takes a constant value in each cell, which I call zij. You can think of this as plus or minus 1. So this is what? This is going to be the summation of those numbers zij squared. This is the L2 loop. So I know a lower bound for M, which involves the L2 norm of F hat on lines, and I know the L2 norm of F hat on the plane. I shall somehow should connect these, right? And the obvious thing to do is to do polar coordinates, but then you have the annoying effect of having a Jacobian there, which is going to ruin your life. So the lemma which I'll present now controls the Jacobian. So for our function F, the following is true, that if you compute the integral of f hat squared away from the origin, then this is at most this small quantity. And this is the integral over the whole plane. Right, so this is the lemma. So in some sense, why do you expect such a thing to be true? Because this somehow says that your function doesn't have too many high frequencies, which is something reasonable, because whatever changes are happening in this function happen at the scale of 1 or more. So you expect it not to have a high frequency component in that sense. So how do you do this? So let me first of all define Q to be the unit square, and the Fourier transform of the unit square at C1, C2, after a simple calculation, becomes some exponential which has modulus 1, so I'm not going to write it, and then you have sine pi x C1 over pi x C1, sine pi x C2 over pi x C2. So you can compute it exactly. And what I care about this is a bound. So this squared at C will be bounded by this and this. And now I observe that I can write my function f as a convolution of chi q with certain point masses. This is how I like to see it. Of course, if you take 10 different people, they're going to write this calculation differently, but let me take g to be the grid point. So it will be ij for I and j goes from 0 to n minus 1. And then I have as my function f is a convolution of chi q with a point mass at each g, rather minus g, with the appropriate coefficient. So it's going to be like this. Z, let's call g in g. So zg is the corresponding number, and the point mass at minus g. Which means that the Fourier transform is the dot product, and when you take the Fourier transform of this, it becomes a trigonometric polynomial with integer frequencies. So It will look like this. Let me call this function phi of xi, and observe that it's periodic with z square as periods. Okay? Because if you change xi by an integer vector, this is integer vector, you'll pick up something which doesn't matter. So this phi is periodic. Okay. Now let's do the calculation, which is this one. So your integral beyond a you can rewrite as, say, the integral where c1 is less than, is at least a over 10, or c2 is at least a over 10. One of the two must be true. And then you put in your function. So you have c, phi c1, c2 squared divided by 1 plus c1 squared, 1 plus c2 squared. So I just used this identity with that estimate. And this integral, you make a sum of integrals onto cells. So I will rewrite this as summation where m is at least a over 10 or n is at least a over 10, and then I'm going to have the integral of the cell defined by mn, so one by one cell starting at mn. And I will estimate in that cell this by 1 over 1 plus m squared, 1 plus n squared, and then I'm left with the integral of phi square in that cell. So that's, the cell is m, n plus q. And now remember, my phi is periodic. Now phi is periodic, so I can erase this here. And this number, by applying Parseval now on the torus, this number is summation dij squared. It's the true norm of this polynomial, which is what I want to end up with. And then you calculate this guy here, which is bounded by C over A. I'll skip this calculation. All right. Okay. Now let's go back to my original problem. Having proved the lemma, I can choose a constant a so that the integral beyond a is at most half the total. So the integral up to a is at least half the total. Therefore, I have the following inequality. So I have one half the total integral, which is this. Is at most the integral c up to a and half c squared. And now I do polar coordinates and I rewrite this as the integral over, let's say, u in the unit circle. This is theta, right? And then I integrate this function along u, and I multiply this by t, but t will be bounded by a, so I will take my t out here. And this is, a is a constant. I didn't bother to compute it, but it's a constant. All right, and now this is bounded above by m square n, this will contribute a constant, so the whole thing is bounded by constant m squared n. And therefore, if you solve for m, you get that m is bounded below by c over root n times this. And in the case, in the plus minus one case where we're interested, this quantity here is n squared x squared dot n, so you're left with a root n above. Okay, that's it. Pretty simple. And now let's go to upper bounds. So we proved that for the finite n by n checkerboard, no matter how you color, you cannot get below n square root of n of the discrepancy. How close to that can you get? Now, things which are at square root of n, the first thing to try is probability. And it actually works. It's pretty easy. I mean, it works up to logarithms, as it usually does. So how do I color my n by n square so that the integral of the function with plus minus one thing, the integral of the function that I get along every line is at most root n log n? Well, you take it as random. So here is your n by n checkerboard. You put plus or minus one independently or uniformly in each cell, and then you want to control the integral of your function along every line segment. We can even do line segments here. Not the whole line. You can even do line segments. And if you fix the line segment, and you call L1 through LK, however many they are, the lengths that it cuts in each cell, then the discrepancy of the line segment will, of course, be given by this, where these are plus minus 1 independently and uniformly. And by standard estimates, you get that the probability of the discrepancy of I being larger than C root n log n is less than n to the minus k. And the important thing here is that you can make this k as large as you want, provided you enlarge this constant. So this can be decreasing polynomially fast, but the degree you can choose, as long as you increase this guy. So this means what? That we can simultaneously control the discrepancy of any polynomial number of line segments in that image. Of course, we want to control it for all line segments. So how do we arrange this? We will find a collection of line segments in there, some collection S of line segments, whose size will be bounded by some polynomial, something like this, n to the 100. Such that if I know the discrepancy is at most this for each one of those guys, then I know it for everyone. And this is not very hard to arrange. Well, you define a much finer grid here. So you take this to be n to the minus 10 by n to the minus 10, and you put one point in each of them. Right? The total number is going to be bounded by a polynomial. If you have the discrepancy bounded for all those guys, then you can easily see that the discrepancy of any other segment is also bounded. The only thing you have to be slightly careful about is that if you have a segment like this, and you want to compare its discrepancy to the discrepancy of one of those guys, you must be careful not to move the ends so as to change the strip, because the discrepancy might change entirely. But you can always move it upwards. Right? This fine grid of points is fine enough. It allows you to compare every line segment with one, or maybe two, if you had to break it into two parts, line segments in your collection. Since you can control those, you can control everything. So this means that we can color the n by n checkerboard so that the discrepancy of every line segment in there is at most root n log n. Let's see what can we do about the infinite case. So we can color any n by n checkerboard nicely. Can we color the entire plane? The first thing that comes to mind is do some kind of diagonal arc. So you take increasing colorings, and this defines the coloring of the plane. Okay? This fails. Why? Because the bound that the probabilistic construction gives you is not with respect to the length of the line segment, but is with respect to the side of the finite checkerboard. So the bound I have there is of this type. Okay. If I had this, then yes, diagonal argument would work. But the probabilistic method does not give that. So, and it's easy to see that it cannot give that, because if you try to control the probability that this is okay, this probability is not a function of n, but it's a function of the length of the line segment. So if n is huge, it will be impossible to control many short line segments. So it's clear that the probability will not give you this. This is what you need. So how do we color the infinite checkerboard so that the discrepancy of every line segment satisfies this or something which is slightly like this? So let me show you a variation of this method which works for the infinite case, with a warning that I only found this 2 days ago, so there might be problems. So how do you do this? We're going to color larger and larger checkerboards. So let's say we have managed to color this checkerboard, and then we go to this. Well, my picture is not exactly what I wanted it to be. So this is what we have colored. Let me call this side length nk, and this sign length nk plus 1. So suppose we have a good coloring for this guy. How do we find a coloring of the outer checkerboard? What I'm going to do is I will take nk plus 1 to be a multiple of this, which will be approximately logarithm of nk to some power. So this will be approximately log of nk some power alpha times nk. Okay, so it will be larger, but not much larger. And then what I'm going to do is I will take this good coloring and I will copy it onto those supercells, nk by nk supercells, into which the large ones are divided. But I will not copy them as they are. I will randomize that. So I will take that and multiply it by random plus minus 1. So this stays as it is, and all the others are copies of this with a plus or minus 1. And if you phrase your induction step properly, which, you know, in this case is slightly tricky because sometimes you have to give to the assumption, sometimes you have to give to the hypothesis to make it work. Anyhow, if you have a line segment like that, then you can control. So the discrepancy of this will again look like that. Only instead of Lj, you will now have the discrepancy of that part with respect to the previous coloring, which is already assumed to be small. And I don't want to go into too much detail in this, but what I get is a coloring of the infinite plane, which is bounded by this. This is probably not here, and you can replace it by some other function, but I was not motivated enough to go into this much detail. So you need this little epsilon more, because when you try to compare to find the bound for the discrepancy of I, what you will be able to do is to compare the discrepancy of I with the function of this. And that is slightly more than I. Anyhow, so this is how the infinite thing goes. And let me now close by saying that, okay, this has turned out to be an easy problem. I mean, we found an upper bound, sorry, a lower bound, and almost matching upper bound. But there's slightly more to it than what I've said. So first of all, I remark here that although what I showed for the finite checkerboard is that a discrepancy, you can always find one segment whose discrepancy is large. The proof is really an L2 argument. So if you define norms, LP norms on the discrepancy, so how would you do it? So this is your N by N checkerboard, and you have several lines here. Okay, this line is parameterized by theta, say, and this length L. Right? So this is a parameter space. To make the norms comparable to each other, you better have your total measure be a constant. So the right measure to work here is d theta dl over n. So if you have this underlying measure, you can define the p norm of the discrepancy function to be the integral over all L and theta with respect to this measure of the discrepancy of the corresponding line. And what I proved before is this lower bound. Which implies this lower bound. I just didn't state it like this in the argument. So down to the two norm, things are clear. So this is bounded above by the upper bound, which is root n log n. So if you're satisfied with logarithms, which I usually am, this is done. But what happens below the two norm? There's something interesting here. I don't know exactly what happens, but I know that if you look at the L1 norm, it can get very small. So let me color the N by N checkerboard in a very imaginative way. All black, all white, all black, all white, and so on. This has the L1 norm of the discrepancy function bounded by log n, which is way below. Now, why is that so? Very easily, because if you draw any line like that, then if you see how it goes in and out of the strips, these parts are equal. So all the inner cuts by strips will be canceling each other out. And the only contribution to the discrepancy will happen at this end and at this end. So if this is, let's say there, your final part, so this is where it goes out of the checkerboard, and this angle is theta. Now this is 1, so this L will be 1 over sine theta. This will be your discrepancy roughly at angle theta. And if you integrate this with respect to that measure, you will essentially, I mean, this will be your discrepancy, but it's also going to be at most n. So what you're really integrating here is 0 to 1, the maximum of n and 1 over sine theta. And theta, which is the same as integrating from 1 over n, where the thing changes, to 1 d theta over sine theta, which is a logarithm. So, although the things are clear here, in the L1 case, it can get down to log n, and I don't have a lower bound there. It will be much harder to obtain. And the L2 things are usually much, much easier than anything else. My guess is that log n is the right order of magnitude for the L1 norm, but I don't know how to prove it. I mean, you would need to apply duality, and the theta L space where your function would need to be defined is not, it confuses me a lot. So it's not as in the classical discrepancy with a rectangle where your your geometric space is the parameter space and everything is defined the same way. This is somewhat confusing. So I don't know if I have anything else to say. I think that's it. Thank you.